Welcome to the Finance Administration Operations Committee meeting of April 15th. Please take the roll.
Committee Chair Peterson?
Here.
Chair Walz?
Here.
Director Darcy?
Here.
Director Gonzalez?
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Is there any public comment today? I don't believe there's any public comments. Okay. Item 4, Chair approval of the minutes of the regular Finance Administration and Operations Committee meeting held on March 18th. Do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
One abstain. I was
a. Oh, you weren't here. Okay. Director Gonzalez abstains. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion passes. Additional items not that I'm aware of. Executive Director Kristen LaFleur has some additional items, I know. We have three presentations today.
We have a couple of presentations, yes. We hope to take two of them up now and one of them right before the pertinent agenda item, if that's okay, which is a Trump, basically our back office electronic toll collection system. So the first is a presentation that we prepared at the committee's request to discuss property and liability insurance, the procurement process. As you know, we've had a couple of discussions in the committee meetings about the process we use to procure insurance. We have in the past used both the process of selecting a broker and then allowing them to go out and survey the landscape of insurance companies and try to get the best price. And we've also used a process where the broker actually comes in with an insurance partner during the bid process. So we wanted to talk a little bit more about that. I'm going to introduce John Hawk, who's our insurance guru. I know that you have a more official title than that, but I don't think it does you justice in the way that insurance guru does. To walk through the presentation, and as always, you know, we will handle this as informally as possible so that we can, you know, facilitate questions or any discussion that you all want to have.
Thank you, Kristen. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Directors. I'm here to provide an overview of the options the tollway has in obtaining competitive proposals for the need of various property and liability-related insurance protection. Now, for our employee health, our employee benefit programs, including health insurance and life insurance, we've used the RFP process, as these insurance carriers have a staff that can provide proposals of the service and premiums needed for such programs. These benefit providers are prepared to respond to the request for proposals and will submit the proposal on a direct basis. For commercial and property liability, the insurance carriers do not have sales staff to provide the proposals and the needed follow-up services for the policyholders. The distribution system that has been established for such insurance is through licensed agents and brokers. In this presentation, I'll be using the term broker, as most commercial insurance is handled through insurance brokers, and they represent a number of insurance companies. First time. There are currently three recognized methods of obtaining insurance needed by the tollway: the request for proposal, or RFP, for insurance coverage, RFPs for insurance broker services, and use of the CMS master contract for insurance broker services. Using the RFP process, around 2002, state statutes were changed, giving procurement authority for insurance to CMS. With that change, the tollway started following the CMS process. Now, that process includes risk management developing general specifications for the insurance required. Risk management and procurement would develop the RFP then. That RFP would be published via the Illinois Procurement Bulletin. Insurance brokers would seek proposals and get quotes from the different insurance carriers. The insurance brokers then would submit the proposal prior to the due date. Those proposals are then reviewed by the tollway selection committee, and they would evaluate the proposals and make a recommendation of selection to the board. The pros and cons of this process include the pros. This process should allow for a wide distribution of the specifications. And this process assumes that many insurance carriers will provide premium quotes for the selection process. The cons:
The RFP was distributed to develop, the RFP that was distributed is developed primarily with the knowledge of the tollway staff, with no input from outside sources. Coverage specifications are limited to the knowledge of the tollway staff. The process limits any interaction of the tollway with potential insurance carriers and their underwriters. And this process may be difficult for new or different brokers due to the unique risk presented with tollway operations. A knowledge base of operations is needed for the interaction of the brokers with potential insurance carriers.
Is it your first 2 points?
Yes.
Is it prohibited by the law that the tollway consult with other people in the design of the RFP?
The people we normally would consult with would be brokers, and what we don't want to do is get a broker to the point where they can't provide a proposal.
But aren't there academics and other people who study the insurance industry or even the Department of Insurance?
Well, the Department of Insurance would not help on this particular thing. We have used sometimes a subcontractor to our consulting engineer, Risk Resources, and they have been a resource for some of this. But some of these things change very quickly. And the reason I say this is we try to keep up on what's going on outside the front doors. We try to maintain a knowledge base of the insurance. Brokers do this. That's all they do. They know what the market is. They know who the new carriers are. They know what policies are available. These are the type of things that we don't have a knowledge of. And so, therefore, we say we want insurance coverage for this in our operations. And maybe we've missed something that needs to be added in there. We don't know what insurance carriers have brought different coverages together. A unique thing that we have in our liability insurance is we have a general liability policy that includes general liability, auto liability, public officials, errors and omissions, and employment practices liability. Now, a lot of carriers will have that as four different policies. But there are carriers that have all four together, and that's what we don't know. We don't know exactly how to get the specifications into our RFP so that we get the best quote sometimes, when you just rely upon the staff here at the tollway.
But you have used the consultant at times to be
able to do that. At times, yes. Yes, we have.
And is there a reason you wouldn't do that every time you did an RFP?
We tried to talk to them about that, and they're very good at giving us information, but... But again, when we get down to writing the words and everything else, we have not contracted them to write the RFP for us.
And we haven't done that because we think it's costly.
There's a cost involved, and there's always that question of we just don't want to get somebody in a position where they can't provide a proposal to us, and that's what we're always concerned about.
Isn't part of the issue, if you go back to the
yes.
Isn't part of the issue with respect to limited interaction that alternative processes provide for more direct interaction with potential carriers?
We think so. And that's something that's fairly new. I mean, this is. What we're going to talk about is some things that have changed fairly recently. This was the process we've used for a number of years. It got us through to where we're at now, but we're looking at some other opportunities in the current insurance industry to change how we obtain our insurance.
So we didn't use brokers in the past, is that what you're saying?
No.
This is the process where the broker, right, comes in with, or an agent, but a broker usually
right.
comes in with the insurance partner.
Right.
In the initial stage in the process, if that's not clear, maybe that's part of the issue. So this is the stage where they come and they choose their partner up front, and they come and propose based on the specifications that we provide. So much coverage, so much in.
So it's broker carrier
right.
combo.
It's the broker carrier.
It's a broker combo. The broker presents what the insurance carrier or insurance carriers will provide for this. So it's their job to go out and do that. And in some cases, it becomes, we're always concerned that maybe some markets were missed because a broker decided not to go out and do that. But we have to keep an arm's length with all the brokers and can't have a special relationship with any of the brokers if we answer questions, that answer goes to all the different brokers that, that have indicated an interest.
And we've used this in the past, this combo?
Before 2002, we used a different process.
But I don't think we previously have used this, yes.
But that's what we've been using since 2002.
Since 2002, we're using this broker carrier.
Yes.
Right.
This RFP process.
But in a recent procurement, we did go out at the board's, not just through the board's request, but I think that there was some thought that maybe we should test out going out and procuring the broker. So I know the next one we're going to go through is, what we feel the pros and cons are and what we've learned from that process now. And I think that, it does provide some flexibility that this process doesn't necessarily maybe provide.
John, can you go back to can you tell me who's on risk management, who's on this team, and who's on the Solway Selection Committee?
The Selection Committee and the team is always varied depending on what type of insurance we go out. The risk manager is always on the team. But we may pull for our property insurance, we may pull people that have understanding from the different departments for property. And when we do liability, we may pull somebody involved with liability insurance or auto liability and those type of things. So there is no specific team. When we do the RFP, we select the actual evaluation team itself.
And your team develops the general specifications? Your team? The risk team?
The risk management department, which is part of finance, develops those specifications.
Okay.
Yes. The second... The second process that we've used or that's available is the process of using an RFP to obtain and contract for an insurance broker services. The rules for this process were developed by the Chief Procurement Office in 2013. Through the RFP process, the tollway contracts for professional services of an insurance broker. The tollway will then work with the selected insurance broker to develop the specifications used to obtain competitive premium quotes from a number of insurance companies. These quotes are provided then back to the tollway selection committee, who makes the recommendation to the board for approval. The pros and cons of this is the premium quotes are based on the specifications, and these are pros. The premium quotes are based on the specifications developed through the work of the broker and the tollway together. We work hand in hand. And this gives the insurance carriers better underwriting information. The process allows for a two-part procurement process. First, the broker is engaged through an RFP process. Then the broker obtains proposals from the insurance carriers, which are evaluated by the tollway team for possible recommendation to the board. The cons are that not all insurance carriers will provide their best quotes to all brokers. This is a fact in insurance. Most brokers will have two or three insurance carriers which they've developed good relationships with. There's a trust factor involved there, and that they get better quotes. Otherwise, sometimes you get, for lack of a better term, a rack rate for the quote for the coverage.
Sometimes brokers have leverage based on the volume they do with these carriers.
That's correct.
And they bring value that way. But also then some of these carriers are precluded from, if a broker Y comes in to a carrier and the carrier says, listen, I'm already working with broker X.
Right.
Why would I waste my time going through all this with you?
Which is one of the problems with the first, that's one of the things I didn't bring up in the first process. In this particular process, you would have one broker, and so they would have the broker of record letters that they can go out and talk to any insurance carrier they think is correct. In the first one, there's always conflicts between the brokers because the broker, the insurance industry says, I'll only work with one broker. So if broker A goes to them and they get them to start to give them a quote, and broker B comes to them and says, I need a quote, says, no, I'm sorry. We're already committed to broker A, and so we can't give you a quote. And we've had some real conflicts from that over the years.
And broker B may ultimately be, their fees may be cheaper than broker A,
correct,
for instance.
Correct. They may have a better, B may be, have that better relationship that the chair talked about as far as having more volume with that particular insurance carrier, or a better understanding with the underwriting. There's a lot of this in insurance. similar to bonds, where you have to talk about the underwriters and how their relationships are with the individual brokers, not the broker agency, but the individual brokers and how much they trust the brokers.
There's been a consolidation in the carrier marketplace. How many viable carriers are there now? Is there, like, we're talking about four or five that we go to all the time?
You mean for our business, for the tollway, for what we do and the fun we had here at the tollway with our amusement park out there? Yes. It is a limited access. An example, Chair, was one time we had a meeting with different insurance carriers for our property insurance. And we had them all up here and we're explaining everything. And one gentleman from one of the insurance carriers said, "Wait a minute, you have Bridges." "Yes, we have Bridges." He took his stuff and he left the room. They won't do Bridges.
Right.
They won't do, I mean, there's a lot. It is sort of unique of the type of insurance that we look for our major ones, our liability insurance and our property insurance.
I also had a question. When you say you're one of the kinds that not all insurance carriers provide the best quote for all brokers, wouldn't part of the purpose of the RFP to get the broker be to determine whether that broker will have access with a lot of those insurance carriers?
Yes.
So if you do that first RFP process, you get the right kind of broker. That solves that problem?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. We overcome it, but this is a possibility that if you don't select the correct broker,
right. Right.
And then you could have a problem as far as getting the right one.
Okay.
The other negative to this particular process is the process requires the selection of a broker with knowledge of toll road or public entity operations. Sometimes this could limit the number of potential brokers in the selection process. Now, this particular process, as Christy has said, is the process we used in our obtaining the cyber liability insurance that the tollway recently procured. And we thought that worked very well for that specialized coverage for us. We had a broker, we worked the broker, we had proposals from many different companies, and then we evaluated that, and I think we got a good package of coverage for our need of cyber liability insurance.
And John, is it ultimately when you have the broker, did we find it? I feel like I remember from this process versus others, we found it a little bit easier once that broker relationship was locked in to kind of go back and forth with the insurance companies,
yes.
Negotiating with them, if we tweak this part of the coverage, if we do this a little differently, versus having to have that so locked in the initial RFP.
I mean, the only people that once we get a broker in this particular situation, we can actually talk to underwriters, we can have phone conferences with them, we need to explain what we're doing, all these type of things, because your initial contract with the broker is the key thing. Once you get beyond that, then you have the flexibility to work with the broker and getting the best package of insurance at the best premium that we possibly can. At least that's what we found with the cyber liability worked very well in that particular one. The third option that the tollway has is a CMS master contract for insurance broker services. Last year, CMS entered into a master contract for insurance services. This allowed for them to consolidate the insurance needs of various state agencies. What CMS found was that they had agencies coming in for this small insurance, and they were spending a lot of time in the RFP process, so they were looking for a way to eliminate that. So they hired one broker to handle all the insurance for a period of time, and that is from 2004 to 2017. The pros of this, and the tollway could use this according to CMS, but the tollway could use the broker when needed during the contract term. This may be a method to obtain quotes for special needs quickly, and that's what they use it for. They've used it for something that comes up on the state fair, and they need weather insurance. They'll go to this broker rather than going through a whole process. The cons of this includes the fact that the current term is only till 2017, and the current needs of the tollway will start for our liability and property insurance for the 2016-2017 policy year. We've got everything tied in for this year till next year, but they will, and we like to have multi-year agreements because once the tollway gets these multi-year agreements with insurance carriers, it's easier to go back to them and ask them for renewals. Insurance carriers like long-term relationships. They don't like situations where you go and look for a new carrier every year. You're not going to get good rates for short-term in for commercial insurance, and so they like to see multi-year agreements in those particular ones. The other con for this is the tollway was not involved in the procurement nor wrote the specifications, so the CMS broker may have limited access to insurance carriers that are needed for the tollway's special needs. An example of this that I was told is that the state was looking for computer insurance. So they bought computer, they had several agencies that wanted computer insurance, so they consolidated that procurement, and they had a policy written for all the different individual agencies. The problem came when it came time to pay the premium, because CMS did not pay the premium for this policy. Each individual agency had to pay the premium. Well, not all agencies are good at paying premiums on time, so you had a policy that was sitting out there that may have had a outstanding balance of $500 for a premium for computers. There was a lot of, it became very cumbersome in the operations when there's a delay in payment. Insurance carriers like you to pay the premium when it's due. I hope this gives you an overview of the three areas that we've used. As Christy said, we've used the procurement process using the broker, hiring a broker, working with the broker in hand, going out to the market and finding good good market. So I think that's something that the tollway should consider on an ongoing basis going forward. Any questions?
So do you recommend the RFP for insurance coverage, that process?
The RFP for the insurance broker, where we hire the broker or brokers. Now, we don't have to hire one broker. We could hire brokers for different coverages. We have two major insurance programs that we have. We have our liability insurance program, and we have our property. Those are the two large coverages. We consolidate automobile in the liability. We consolidate excess liability. There's different parts of it. But we have two large programs that we have.
Who's our broker and carrier now for this?
For the liability insurance that we just got approved, the broker is USI Midwest. The primary insurance carrier is the insurance company of the state of Pennsylvania, and then there's several insurance carriers that provide excess coverage for that. For our property insurance, our broker is Mesereau Insurance Services. And we have two primary insurance carriers for that. One for this building, which happens to be Chubb Group, and the one for, we have a blanket insurance program for everything else outside of the CA facility, and that's with RSUI. Too many acronyms.
Could you talk for a minute about fees and how this process impacts fees, both in terms of broker and in terms of the carrier?
The good way to do this is to hire a broker and have them quote a flat fee. That way you don't have any commissions or anything else. When we went out before and would send the RFP out to many different brokers and just put it out there, usually the broker gets paid with a commission.
You mean an RFP for the broker-carrier combination?
Yes.
I just want to...
That's the way we determine. Everyone understands that, but...
Yeah, broker-carrier combination.
Broker-carrier combination, yeah. Usually it's a commission. The good thing about a fee, and we found this with the cyber liability, we hired a broker to handle that, and it happened to be Mesereau, who handled our cyber liability. They came in and gave us a flat fee for the finding of the coverage and indicated a flat fee for each of the renewals. They were not going to take any commission or anything else. So if you've paid them their flat fee, then you've eliminated any concern that maybe if they go to this particular carrier, they'll get a contingent commission, or there may be some other fees that they get. And what I like to do on the broker is to say, you're going to get this fee, and that's it. That's all you're going to get. Now, in the case of USI, who has been our broker for several years on the liability, they've always quoted a flat fee in their proposal, and they don't. They tell us, and they indicate that they do not take any contingent commission based on how much business they do. That's how they've done business. Mm-hmm. The other players in that particular one do take a percentage of the premium in commissions.
I'm sorry. Who are the other players?
Oh, they have a MBE participant, and then they have a wholesale broker, that, and they are paid based on a percentage. But the primary broker gets paid a flat fee.
And was that something that was specified in the RFP?
No.
So how did the selection committee take into account the broker fees as they were
when they first came on, they were basically the low bid with their package. They beat out the incumbent, and with their combination of the premiums they were going to charge and their flat fee, they were the low bid. And subsequent RFPs, they've been the low bid.
And you didn't specify in the RFP whether you wanted a contingency commission process?
No, the only thing we asked, first we said we did not want to pay any contingent commission. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we said you have to declare what your payments are going to be in your proposal.
So you could consider that in your review
yes.
of the proposal. So may I conclude from this discussion that you feel as if we got a better financial deal under this process as well?
I think so, because there's no hidden fees. I think it's very important for us as we go forward that we don't have this has been a bone of contention in the insurance industry for some time. But it's sort of disappeared in the industry because the brokers and the industry has found out you need to be transparent in what you're being paid, and I think that's very important for everyone to know that. Especially in public entities, and that's what I've told them before.
So,
I don't care what they do with Ford Motor, but that's what they do, for us.
So this may be a pro that we haven't listed here, but is it?
It could be, yes.
Any other questions?
Well, I want to personally thank you because, and the patience of the rest of the committee, this is something I've been trying to understand, and also for this example with the cyber insurance where you actually tried something different and got some good information about how it works, and I think that's been very helpful.
Yeah, we thought, because it was sort of, we knew it was going to be a smaller program, this was not the size of the liability or the property, but we at least wanted to try the process and see if it worked. And I think the team and I think finance and risk management thought it was a way to go, at least in particular that particular program, and probably would be our recommendation on an ongoing basis. How we use the broker thing is something we've been discussing, but I think that I've never been one to say that I would give all my insurance to one broker. It's been very good for the authority to have multiple brokers, so if we have a question, we can at least call them and use their expertise when we have a problem or some question that we have out there.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Nice presentation.
Thank you. So I think it sounds like, from our perspective, the solicitation of a broker relationship, has really been beneficial and is probably, as we proceed, is likely to be used more frequently going forward. So that was some very valuable input we got from the board. So thank you. Some of a great deal of valuable input that we always get. Don't want to make it sound unusual.
Even gurus.
Gurus, right. Even gurus can benefit.
I could just add one point that we... The process, as John noted at the beginning of the presentation, CMS is statutorily the entity that's authorized to make insurance procurements, so we will be seeking a delegation from them, as we do every year, that we would be able to go through this process.
Good. The next update is on the performance of commercial vehicles on our system in the first quarter of 2015. We thought that it was worth it for us to spend time specifically on this topic because there was a toll increase that was enacted in January for commercial vehicles. It's one of a series of increases. It was a 40% increase in tolls that began in January. Subsequent increases will be smaller. But for the first 3 months of this year, I think we're very happy actually to report that the tollway has seen a 6.4% increase in all traffic,
6.8% in passenger cars and 3.4% in commercial vehicles. So we continue to monitor the performance of our system, but we do see this strong performance relative to projections. And even with the commercial toll increase going into effect, we've seen some good performance in that sector of our traffic as well. So, Rocco?
All right. Thank you very much. So, yeah, we'll just give you a brief snapshot of where we are. I call it the first quarter of 2015, but actually we're taking this the data is really through April 5th, the first week of April. So, things we're going to go over is just kind of an overview of what the director just mentioned, talk a little bit about the metrics that we do monitor. This is pretty typical for us. Is there any changes in construction or maintenance of traffic, we do monitor of various metrics. Give you some of the initial summary of what we are seeing, some of the early trends, and then talk about what we're going to be continuing to do. So as the director just mentioned, as you well are aware, there was a toll increase that was effective January 1st of this year. It was a 40% increase. Just a couple clarifications. You know, we still do offer an overnight discount. That's really from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. We'd like to make sure that, you know, we point this out. It was our really an initial kind of some form of value pricing to get shifting to the overnight. I'll show you some of the stats on that. And then it's also to make sure we understand this too, is that there is no differential for commercial vehicles, unlike passenger cars, for between cash or on cash customers. As I said, the monitoring results that you'll see are through April 5th of this year. Some things that to consider is what we're seeing is very encouraging is that we did see some shifting of traffic. You know, things that we're monitoring is what happens now that we finished the western end of western 37 miles of the Jane Addams. We're also seeing some shifts down at the due to the 294-57 project. So that kind of goes into some of the information that you see. And then we also continue to measure our actual performance versus forecast, and we're doing well as far as that goes. We'll be continuing our communication with the trucking industry. Myself and Tom Cahill were at the Midwest Truckers Association meeting last month. That was in February, and we've got some newsletters and things like that going out with the industry. So much more targeted outreach to the industry. So some of the metrics that we do monitor, as I said, this is pretty typical. Anytime we have any construction or any change of traffic, maintenance of traffic, when we increase capacity, we always like to monitor and provide a new access monitor, a variety of things. This in particular, the stuff that we're looking at is really geared to what we're seeing on the commercial vehicle front. The data that we're looking at for this purpose is really what we're seeing at from the plaza level, at the mainline plazas, the transactions and revenue. Coming from that, we also look at the vehicle classification. Trucks are three different classes, tier 2, 3, and 4. 2 is the small truck, 3 is a medium truck, and I've got an exhibit in the appendix to show what those are. 2 is a small, 3 is a medium, and tier 4 is the large semi. So we look at what's happening with the vehicle classifications. The time of day, like I said, we do offer the overnight discount, so we really continue to monitor what's happening through there. We look at the I-pass percentage versus cash. It's about 87.7%, about 88% of the commercial vehicle I-pass percentage, so very, very high. We look at weather conditions, so some stuff that we look at right now, it's kind of premature because if we compare 2014 to 2015, every winter is different. Last year was particularly harsh at different times of the season, so some of the stuff it's a little too premature to report out on just yet, so due to weather. Some of our construction, we look at some of the delays caused to construction and weather as well, and we look at crash rates. If there's other things that you'd like to see us monitor, please let me know. We can talk about that towards the tail end or any point in time. So the initial summary of the metrics, in the first 3 months and 5 days of 2015, we have seen an increase in overall transactions up all traffic on the tollway, as the director mentioned. Transactions up total about 6.4% from year to year, so that's a very positive thing for the agency overall. Passenger cars are up about 6.8%, and commercial vehicles up about 3.4%. What we are seeing so far between 2014 and 2015 is that the percent of commercial vehicle transactions is very comparable to last year's, down slightly, but that's just really a reflection of we're seeing more growth in the passenger car side. So really very consistent on 2014 and 2015. Overall revenue is up about 20%, with the CV revenue constituting about 43% of that revenue increase. We're seeing very little change in commercial vehicle travel habits. On the left, what we look at is CV transactions by rate tier. As I said, this is a rate tier one, which is the small trucks, tier two is the medium, and tier three is the large. What we thought might have happened, and we actually thought this because we heard a little bit about this when we were doing some of our freight planning outreach, is that there might be some transitioning from the large trucks. There may be more efficiencies of carriers moving goods and services and maybe some smaller trucks just to save some dollars as far as that go. But as you can see, absolutely consistent, if not a little bit of growth in the large trucks as far as rate tiers. Time of day, really no change at all. Pretty darn consistent across the year, so that we never see a shift into more trucks using the late night, the overnight hours. It's something that we've always tried to, you know, from this goes back to the strategic advisory team days, to see what we can do to maybe shift some of those behaviors around. University of Illinois, the Urban Transportation Center is now also reaching out and trying to do some pilot projects to see if they can shift some travel behaviors. But it's really driven by the receiving end of the distribution channel where they can't really change the hour. So we're not seeing much of a shift or a change in any travel habits. It's a very brief presentation. So what we're going to continue to do is monitor the performance of all traffic, particularly look at the trucks continue throughout the rest of the year. We'll see if there's any normalization due to the weather and things like that, see if there's any air shifting or changing. If there's any other metrics that you'd like to see us monitor, I kind of went through a little bit of a list. If there are other things that you'd like to see us continue to track, we can certainly do that. You know, we've got what Wilbur Smith or CDM Smith does for us annually is our annual traffic and toll revenue report. A tremendous amount of information in that report that we can pull a lot of different stats, statistics out of there for measuring what's happening. We'll be continuing to do our outreach with the commercial industry and the freight industry. We've got a newsletter that's going to be anticipated sending direct newsletters out to the associations and those who have signed up for information. The upcoming newsletter, we're going to focus on a couple different things we have been working on for the last several years. An online permit application. We've got about 85 agencies or fleets that are enrolled right now for an online overweight permit. So that's been something that we've been
pushing. The importance of that is that often the companies, they're not just necessarily coming to the tollway for the permit. They have to get permits from the various jurisdictions for the roads that they're traveling on to haul their load. So this is a partnership with the Illinois Department of Transportation, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, so this is interesting. Yeah, that's an excellent point. Because right now, if you're a truck, and we're working with a lot of different agencies on this, if you're a truck and you're driving through and overweight, you have to get a permit from townships, county, a municipality, IDOT, the tollway, to drive your load really across the state. So right now, the tollway and IDOT are lining ourselves up. We had an agreement that went to the board a few months back to basically share our information for the standard overweight permits. So this is something that we're going to continue to try to get all of the other agencies to basically one-stop shop for permits. World Business Chicago is actually taking the lead on some of this as well. So yeah, we've got an online permit application process now. So we're going to put that in our newsletter, make sure that these fleets know that this is available to them. Makes it a lot easier for them to pay before they have to get to the plazas. We're also going to let them know about online account management. When we were down at the Truck Association show, we learned that not as many fleets knew about the online account management. They said it would be really great if we could see all the transactions. Well, you can. So we want to make sure that the fleets understand this, of what services are available to them, and also inform them about the commercial vehicle speeds. As you may recall, we did a commercial vehicle strategic plan at the end of last year. Part of the work that goes through the strategic planning committee. So we adopted that and approved that. We shared that with all the industry and the stakeholder industries. The Department of Transportation is working on a statewide freight plan. We've also shared it with the Trucking Association and the and some of the other industry partners. A rollout of that work that we've done in the past, we have a professional services bulletin item for design upon request to look at a contractor truck parking plan and design. That's one of the things that we heard
very clearly from the industry, two issues that really continue to bubble to the top of the issues within this area is a lack of parking, and congestion is another deterrent to travel in this area. So what we're looking at is a master plan for parking design, looking at the oases, looking at toll plazas, and the possibilities of any other off-system partnerships. Again, so this was just a snapshot of what we've done for the first month and 5 days, or what we're seeing for the first month and 5 days of the year.
Quarter.
Of the quarter, yes. I'm sorry, first 3 months and 5 days. Quarter and 4 days, 5 days. I should just say quarter. So for the first quarter. Right.
You're very precise.
Right.
It's appreciated.
Right.
Do we have a problem with overweight trucks, and what percentage of trucks are overweight, and how is that enforced?
I could speak to the enforcement would be this part of the room. I wouldn't say we have a problem with it. It's a very, very nominal percentage of all of our truck traffic percentage. Jonathan, would you know what that is?
No, percentage? I don't know that number off.
You were just waving to me back there?
No, I was giving you that.
Oh, right, the high five. It's a very small percentage of accounts. Like I said, we've got 85 fleets that have registered for an online permit, so it's not a big thing as far as enforcement. I don't know if you have anything to offer as far as that goes.
Our enforcement with trucks was up 40% in 2014, and reduction of fatalities and semis that were involved in fatal or serious injury accidents was reduced. Overweights, we'll see an increase next year because we'll be focusing on that.
Are there sensors in the pavement, Paul?
So we have constructed some weighing motion stations. We have some plans also, and I think I brought those contracts to the board already, to install some truck scales at some critical spots on the system at our maintenance facility so that we can work with ISP, with Illinois State Police on doing some targeted enforcement on areas. The way in motion, I'll have to get back to you on that. We deployed them strategically, and we are building some into the new I-90 corridor. We tried to put them at locations, you know, where we feel trucks are entering the system so that we can get an idea, you know, when they're traveling. And it is the way in motion itself, though, I know, also is not, you have to work with state police because it'll identify if there's an overweight truck coming, but we still have to actually pull them over, correct?
And confirm it.
So we designed specific locations downstream of these pavement sensors so that they can conduct those activities.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. I just know from your company, maybe you can give stats again, for every truck, it's the equivalent of how many passenger vehicles as far as the impact? What was that number you had?
A fully loaded truck is 10,000.
10,000.
That's assuming it's fully loaded at 80,000 pounds.
The truck would be equivalent to 10,000 passengers. Wear and tear on the system. The other question I have for you was the overnight discount. Is that just for the commercial vehicles? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
And the reason it's not driving any numbers there because it's on the receiving end. It's kind of dictating the hours for the commercial traffic.
Yes.
So the overnight discount's not.
It hasn't done anything to sway the behavior to travel more in the off peak. It's something that we, as a region, has been working on for several years to see what can be done. A few different restrictions that are out there. One is at the receiving end, you've got to have the employees working at different shifts. So okay, now they're just getting that shift is one component of it. But then you also have to have the communities themselves be willing to accept deliveries. In an overnight time frame too, as you can imagine, when a truck is backing up, it does have a bit of an annoying beeping sound. So that is something that is somewhat of a deterrent within the municipalities themselves. So we've never really seen a big shift. Something that is being worked on through University of Illinois Chicago through their Urban Transportation Center. What they would like to try is a pilot program within the city of Chicago to see if they can work with the trucking industry and the back-end suppliers to do some shifting of, on a specific locality for the inner city area. So, we'll see what happens with that. And it might be what we see a lot on our system is the trucks sit in the oasis or on the side of the road waiting for that call to go. So that's kind of what we see. I do want to say one thing. A lot on the overweights, it's interesting on the overweights, those, like I said, 85 companies have signed up for the online permit application. Several of those companies are companies who do construction work for us. So it's that gravel truck who's hauling stone, whatever it might be. So a lot of those, there's a reasonable number that you see that are associated, overweights are associated with construction.
Are they also part of your design, part of the design plan for the Oasis for parking? Are they, you're getting, I think you said you're getting input from the associations?
Yes, so what we've got, this, that's what we'll be doing with the an upcoming bulletin will be coming, or selection will be coming to you shortly, to look at overall master plan design. So we look at what's the layout, what are the issues.
But not just necessarily at the Oasis, right? Just
it would be whatever we have.
Or other strategic locations.
Any land that we have. So really looking at our system to see what can we do, and then look a little bit off of our system to see how we might be able to partner somewhere else.
Any other questions?
I was just wondering, how much is that discount you give on that 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.?
It varies because we don't have a standard, what is it, Mike? Is it 10? 25%? Yeah, on the total. So, but there's no, it's not a specific dollar amount.
So you receive a bunch of cars, right? Would you, as the recipient, encourage the people who deliver to drive at night to...
Sure.
And have people there to accept the delivery, or maybe there don't need to be people there.
They can drop them off and put everything in a night drop box. I have it. It's much easier for us because we've got so much traffic on our properties during the day that it would help us a lot to have it at night.
But you haven't used this in the past? You haven't encouraged the overnight delivery?
Yeah, they do a lot of night drops in my places. It really helps us a lot. They know right where to put them. We come in the morning, there's no haulers running around our property, and a lot less congestion, but I don't know if that 25% is enough to drive them.
Yeah, I think it's worth exploring, right? I've certainly heard us say in the past that this hasn't been enough of a differential to change, you know, behavior for a variety of reasons. So, you know, it might be something that, I know we're working with World Business Chicago, for instance, on some of their initiatives, but something that we can continue to evaluate with the Strategic Planning Committee probably is, you know, if there's anything else we should
What about charging more at peak times, you know, drive times? You're like this morning coming here, you always got to judge the truck traffic is the heaviest part of our commute in the mornings. Perhaps we could take a look at something to deter that window.
Or incentivize an off-peak.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, give them a little bit, give them the same discount to run 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon to try and open up that drive time for the commute for the...
We did have that at one point in time. I'm just trying to think, Mike, when did that sunset? Maybe 2008-ish or so?
It did, yeah.
We had, it was an off-peak drive time, so I think it was...
For electronic meters, yeah. There was an off-peak discount.
I think, or 10 to 3, something like that.
Yeah. Did we see significant change?
And again, it was kind of on the margin.
Yeah.
Not a significant impact in terms of either moving to the discount and then when it was removed.
I know other systems around the country that have done peak pricing. I know that there are various names for it, but we'll just, you know, peak drive time pricing for vehicles. You know, I think have seen some difference across all vehicle types. So, you know, maybe something to look at down the road.
I'll have Director Darcy conduct the hearing.
I'll do that.
I had a question, Rocco, on slide 11. I don't have any idea what we're clearly below the middle in terms of our rates. As this rate continues to increase, where do we end up? Do you know? I mean, just approximately. We're not gonna be the Skyway.
Can I say this bottom? Maybe what you can't really see in there is that what we see is that we're not the only one who had an increase in 2015.
Yeah.
You can see a bunch of them. So at one point in time we were here, now we dropped because many others have bunched up. So some of these kind of fluctuate through here. Can't really say exactly where we're going to land because if everybody else changes,
I think that if everything stayed the same, just from my own math, it looks like we'd still be kind of in that mid-range.
Mm-hmm. But we're never, I mean, we already can anticipate we're not going to be above certain people whose rates might go up. I mean, it's unlikely that their rates would go down, right?
Unlikely.
Right.
Hasn't been the trend.
Right. So ultimately, what's the cost per mile when we hit our max?
Well, it's tied to CPI, so I just don't. There is.
So we don't know.
We don't know what the max will be. I mean, it's going to go up 10% next year, 10% the following
right.
year, and then it's tied to CPI. After
right, that. But the 10% and the 10% will get us
60% above. I think it was around
35. So we've got the first 40. So we'll have 10% next year, which will take us up to about
66.
Okay, so it's marginal.
Next year we'll hit,
okay.
we'll be about here. The following year we'll be let's you know. About
here. Okay. And then it's going
to. Yeah. So you're saying, so, right. And so you'll, and then you'll see, of course, other toll increases
yeah.
with some of these entities that haven't seen them, you know, for several years. You would expect that there might be some. So.